and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is in the building. Penny is getting back from a Las Vegas trip where he was out at Pangos All-American Camp. And he had a takeaway that we just kind of have to start with. And it's about Jalen Duren, right?
Yeah, I'm back to reality on the East Coast. Luckily, it's still warm here. Doesn't have the amenities that Las Vegas may, but yeah, we're getting back in the swing of things, which is good.
Yeah, so we're going to talk Jalen Duren at the top. We're going to talk a little bit about who we picked four each. I think Penny picked five because he's an overachiever on this podcast, and I'm not an overachiever on this podcast. Yeah. The guys that we think are going to rise and help themselves, if we had to place bets on the guys that are going to rise and help themselves in the pre-draft process, these are the guys that we think are going to improve their standing. And then, I don't know, we might talk. I'm like 4 hours away from In the Heights right now, which is like the movie I am second most excited about this summer outside of Fast 9. So I'm just like kind of riding high on Cloud 9. Today, Penny.
I'm riding high on Cloud 9 because I just saw that Jurassic Park launched their like teaser promo that Jurassic World, whatever the number is, comes out June 10th, 2022. So I had 365 day countdowns on the wall. We'll peel one piece of paper off every day at my desk.
Wait, so we have to peel back the layers here. So, Penny, are you a like enormous Jurassic Park fan? Is this a thing?
It's a thing. I put it this way. I was a huge Jurassic Park fan growing up. Jurassic Park 1, Jurassic Park 2. And now I just like chase that nostalgia with each movie. I go in excited. There's a few good minutes. There's a lot of bad minutes. And I leave being like, I don't know why I got so excited. Then they have the teaser promo, the teaser trailer, and it pulls me right back in.
The first Jurassic World.
That's how Hollywood works. It's like Hollywood knows what they're doing. They're feeding to my past. They're feeding to my childhood. You hear the score, the symphony, the John Williams, and you're like, oh, there we go. And then it's whatever. It's lukewarm, but it brings you back.
Yeah, I thought Jurassic World was good. I didn't really like the second one. I thought the second one was more what you're talking about. I thought it was kind of a mess. But, like, the first one I thought was, like, totally good, like, exciting, blockbuster, kind of everything you just look for, you know?
There's only so many spins you can do with dinosaurs. Like, they get back to the mainland, they mess up the island. There's not a lot of, like, in between. I'm glad they haven't, like, gone to outer space yet or done something completely irrational. But I'm sure that's, like, a movie or two away from being where we're at.
Well, so Universal owns both the Jurassic series, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, and the Fast and Furious series. And I saw a headline maybe a month ago that was like Jurassic World and Fast 9 crossover movie, ?
No. Is that clickbait or is that going to happen? Like, is Vin Diesel going to pull up and nod to a T-Rex and say La Familia and pull out? I can't get there.
My father. So I think that like it was just based off of some offhand comment that one of the producers made, like, oh yeah, like we would love to explore that. And it's just like, yeah, let's all get excited about that. But I can only imagine Vin Diesel trying to incorporate one of the Jurassic dinosaurs into his family. I mean, I'm all in.
It could happen. I'd like to see the Venn diagram of those two fans and how they think this would actually look and be successful. It would sell tickets. That's one thing. It would sell tickets. It wouldn't flop.
I mean, like, I
think we just came up with something. Unfortunately,
I'm so excited for Fast 9. I get to see it next week. It comes out here next week. Because, like, Vin Diesel is now a father. And I watched Fast 5 last night or two nights ago or something. And the way that Vin Diesel says father is unlike anything I've ever understood on this planet. He's like, my father. Like, how does one get there in the pronunciation of father?
Is that method acting? I don't know. You're smarter than me. You worked in Hollywood. You know that more better than I would.
I love Vin Diesel so much. I have an unabashed just love of those movies. They are just the best things on planet Earth, and I'm so excited to go see that. And I get to see In the Heights today. And In the Heights, it's so weird. Like In the Heights and Fast 9, like you can't really pick two different movies, but I'm close to equally as excited about both of them.
The duality of life. It's a good thing. It's good to have some balance.
Okay, so let's talk about Jalen Duren. So you got to see Jalen Duren play this weekend. Just kind of, you were so inspired that you wanted to talk about him on the podcast. So just kind of give me the scoop on why you're so pumped about Jalen Duren right now.
So I've been able to watch Jalen Duren beyond camp setting. So I watched him play with Roman Catholic. I watched him play with Mount Vernon Academy in Florida, and now here. And camp basketball isn't always real life. It's up and down. It's transition based. It can be a dunk show at times. He was still able to show the appeal as a prospect, where he's 6'10", he's 230 pounds of muscle. He looks like a college senior. He has long arms, big hands, huge feet. So you see the feet at size 18 or so and wonder if it's going to hurt him, and it doesn't. He rim runs hard, he hedges well, he recovers defensively out of high ball screens, and he has this presence in the paint on both ends. He's a great shot blocker that punches blocks. When he blocks a shot, the whole team knows it. It's not when he soft things off the backboard. Like, he's punching or turning your head saying, what happened on that court? Which actually happened because night one, all the NBA guys kind of flocked to court one. I'm like, I'm going to hide in court two just to, like, get some guys off my list. And there's times you just heard it, and it's like, oh, and it's a punch. And like, yeah, that was a block. No, I think I know what happened there. Offensively, catches everything in his area. He carves and holds out space in the post. And it's not a bully ball game, which you would expect at his size and his strength. It's a blend of power and finesse. And when he gets to his move, he's tearing the rim down. And added to that, he led the camp in assists. So he took his time, he let the play develop, he saw cutters down the lane, he saw shooters in the corners, and then the next play he'll face up, he'll jab step a little, hit short jumpers, even hit a few threes here that looked natural enough. If that's consistent, there's no way he's not a top five pick at worst. And the biggest thing has always been the motor staying turned on. Not that he has it, but just will it stay turned on? And I felt like it was on high all weekend. So you have a ton of NBA scouts and front office people there. I think the final number is like 48 total. He had reps from G League Ignite, Overtime Elite. I don't know how people didn't walk away without being completely impressed with him as a player and a prospect.
So yeah, I'll be honest. Like, you and I have talked about Amani Bates, and we've talked about that high school class, the 2022 high school class, quite a bit. And I feel like one thing we kind of took away from the last Amani Bates conversation was just, we kind of thought that Jalen Duren was the guy, was the number one player in the class right now. Not like in the future necessarily, but right now, Jalen Duren was the best player in the 2022 class. Am I wrong about that?
You're not wrong. And shortly thereafter, after like another tournament or two, Rivals was the first site to put actually Jalen Duren leapfrog Amani Bates into one. So he's always been in that conversation. Chris Livingston's another wing who's kind of right there. It's been like a three-ish man race.
Yeah, and I really like Chris Livingston too. Like, from what I've seen, he's not like a crazy, crazy athlete, but he's very, very skilled and has an exceptional game from what I've seen. I don't think he's quite in the Bates-Duren class, but I understand your point. In terms of Jalen Duren, my question has always been, I love the impact defensively. I think he's exceptional on that end. I think he's one of the best prospects I've evaluated defensively, because he's really good rotating over from the weak side. He's consistent with it. He is switchable on the perimeter because he's as athletic as he is. He's twitchy. He can move his feet exceptionally well, kind of like you said. I mean, defensively, like, he is kind of like Bam Adebayo, just like 5 years, 6 years younger or whatever, right?
There's elements of that. And before Imani Bates, the rest of the spring, joined team final to play with Jalen Duren, when Imani Bates was playing with his own team, Bates Fundamentals, in that matchup with team final at Made Hoops event, Midwest Mania, Jalen Duren guarded Imani Bates.
Oh, yeah. No.
People were like a little surprised because he is 6'10 with a huge wingspan. And he looks like a post, and he is a post, but his feet are quick enough, and he's smart enough and has instincts that he guarded a 6'8 wing who is ranked number one in the class or two in the class or whatever, and shut him down, for lack of a better term.
No, and it's the pride that he takes. Like, he is not someone, like, he does not want to get scored on. Like, he is someone who, and you said, like, the motor turns on and off. I'll be honest, like, in the games I've watched, I haven't really seen that. I've only seen him, like, with the motor turned up. Oh, I mean, what does it look like when it goes?
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it's been on. It's been cranked up. And It's not that he was bored, but there is times watching him play high school basketball, and this is before we get to Mount Vernon, when he's at Roman Catholic, when the level of competition, it's not that he was bad, but when you're that big and you're that strong, and say you're playing a post who's 6'8 and maybe 190 pounds if you're lucky, you're just going to like turn your shoulder and cram on him every time and punch his
right.
shots into the fifth row. When it levels out the playing field a little bit and he's really at least somewhat challenged, you see that glimmer and that fire really come out in his game.
Yeah, the thing that I've kind of always noticed that I like too is that he's basically like a walking momentum shift waiting to happen on a basketball court because of how aggressively he plays. Like you said, like he doesn't just block shots, he punches them into the fifth row. Like I posted a highlight of him in high school this past year, and it's him literally spiking a block that goes over the top of the backboard after hitting the ground because he spiked it into the ground so hard. Like,
and he had another one. He had another one was on ESPN, I think, the game, and he rotated. I don't know, it was a floater, but it was like a decent shot by Roddy Gale, who's going to Ohio State, and he just like mm-hmm. pulled it out of the sky. It was like Bill Russell-esque or Wilt Chamberlain-esque. So he just pulled it out of the sky. It just, some of the stuff he does doesn't make sense for the way his body is constructed.
And for him being, what is he? He's like 17 and a half, 18?
In that range? Don't have the birthday, but that would be my guess.
Just a ridiculous defensive prospect. Offensively, I love the passing. Like, I'm really glad that you brought that up. I'm really glad that he led Pangos in assists so that, like, there's some numerical evidence to back that up, right? Really sees cutters kind of all over the court. Like, I think that he's really good as a downhill driver at like putting the ball in his left hand and just hitting that little drop off to the cutter behind the defense, particularly. In terms of the rest of the offensive game, I think he's going to be really good in like dribble handoff settings. He's going to be really good as like a pick and roll, pick and dive big man that finishes. And I think that because of that ability to pass, he's going to be good in short roll settings. I'm like 10% worried about how he scores at the next level and if he's going to be a high level scorer. But you kind of mentioned to me, I don't remember if you said this on air or off air, that the shooting looks a lot better for you now. And if he's shooting, like anytime that I've ever seen him shoot, it's mostly just like he gets the ball on the left block and then turns right shoulder for a fadeaway. If he's like actually shooting threes, I mean, it's not curtains, but like it's going to be,
it's
he's
close.
Gonna be ridiculous.
Yeah. He hit two the first game that I didn't see. It was on the other court. Again, I still have a scouting service where I have, there's 105 players in camp. I just didn't want to gravitate toward him and Keontae George right. and Zion Cruz the whole time. But the game that I watched it in front of me the next day, he missed one. It looked clean enough. And then he had another face up with like really good footwork where he kind of like stepped and stepped back, had his balance and hit like a 12 footer. So it's getting there. It's evolving. It's not a finished product, but there's enough that gives you hope. It could get to a place where it at least keeps the defense somewhat honest. I don't think he's going to be spotting up on the break and pulling up transition threes, but if he pick and pops and the guy goes with the driver and kicks back, he's going to keep you honest.
Yeah, totally. So I agree with you. I'm at the point where I think he's the number one player in that class right now. Like, you know, Imani Bates, I think, has more upside because guys who can be ridiculous pull-up threats in the way that Imani has potential to be just generally have more upside if things come together, right? Like, that's just the way that the NBA is right now.
Always bet on wings. That's the way it is, yes. And it's a weird spin for me as I've also evolved into not anti-big, but I do have that, like, pause of how the offense works, how it looks in a seven-game playoff series, how the NBA has shifted, but it's, you can't completely dismiss the performance the guy had when sometimes kids check out, and he dominated from horn to horn, who's camp MVP, and when it got up and down, he was fine, and when it slowed down, he was fine too. And this wasn't a camp where there's 105 kids and 30 of them are good and 75 of them are just whatever. Like, there were at least half these kids legitimate high majors and other high major bigs in the class. Guys in 2023, guys in 2024, like the event was loaded. So it's not, we're not watching highlight videos of him playing some local team in Florida that Mount Vernon Academy added to the schedule because they needed a game. Like, this was legit competition.
Right. I think that's probably enough on Duren particularly, but one thing we wanted to kind of shift this to now is the way that bigs have been used in the playoffs and kind of discussing Duren, you know, almost in that parameter in a way. And the way that it interests me is that, you know, we saw the effect of Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis last year leading, you know, or playing second fiddle to get their teams to the final as the second best player on those teams. We've seen Nikola Jokic step up in a big way. We've seen Joel Embiid step up in a big way again in the playoffs, even with his knee injury. We have seen DeAndre Ayton be exceptionally effective so far for the Phoenix Suns, although I think that a big part of that is more the way that teams have to defend Chris Paul and Devin Booker in pick and roll. Like, DeAndre is basically getting everything force-fed to him at the rim, and it's on DeAndre that he's doing a great job of rim running and putting that pressure on the defense, and I think it says a lot of how valuable that can be if he would just do that every single night. But at the same token, he's really been excellent throughout the course of the playoffs. So I don't want to say we're getting back to the point where bigs are valuable. I think bigs have always been valuable. It's just that you have to be like a top 10 big in the NBA to be valuable. And if you are a top 10 big in the NBA who can do a lot of different things, like Nikola Jokic being one of the two best offensive players on planet Earth, or Bam Adebayo being able to switch everyone defensively, Anthony Davis being like the best help defender in the NBA, DeAndre Ayton being able to rim run in an elite level, protect the rim reasonably well, switch onto the perimeter and guard bigger players. There's just a lot that all of those guys can do. If you can be a versatile, multi-talented big, you are still extremely valuable. It's just that the replacement level for these more limited bigs, I think, is much, much higher than it used to be.
But it's more of a celebratory victory lap a little bit. And I made the joke that agents of five men probably rejoiced with the Jokic MVP award. And maybe guys take different looks at a player like Sandro Mamukelashvili from Seton Hall. We've talked about Sengun at length. We've talked about Garza at length. It's a recency league. And I'm just curious how many kind of copycats are out there and see the success of these bigs and maybe don't dismiss it and take it more into consideration when you're picking. Maybe it's the second round, maybe it's not 10th overall, but how those guys fit into the system of play. You made a really good point about Booker and Chris Paul really setting the table for Ayton, but we can't take away the production levels that he's had.
Totally. No, I totally agree with that. I think that the big thing is being able to do a lot of different things well. You can't just be a rim protector, rim runner anymore. You need to be able to guard away from the basket. You need to be able to make plays with the ball in your hand, at least in like dribble handoffs and off of movement. Like, you can't just be like Clint Capella is no longer just a rim running big like he was in Houston. Like, he can occasionally hit like a short corner read. He can run dribble handoffs, and he's really good in ball screen scenarios with Trae Young. He's switchable enough. He hits the barometer of being switchable defensively. Someone like Nikola, I mean, like Jokic is just a total anomaly in so many ways. Like, I just wrote about that.
And I also, we've kind of got to dismiss him a little bit in like a good sense for him. And people throw around the term unicorn, and it's generally for like 7'2 guys that can shoot and run. Like, he's a unicorn too, because like the way he passes and moves and sees the floor, I don't even like, this is going to sound stupid, I don't even like consider him a big man. He's just like this enormous playmaking forward. That's the way I look at it.
Well, like, he is essentially, he put up a season in terms of scoring and shooting the basketball that was better than anything Dirk Nowitzki ever did this year. And then on top of it, he was one of the five best passers in the NBA this year.
Did he have that on his MVP warm-up shirt he had yesterday? Did you see that?
Yeah, it was amazing.
That was amazing. It's like too fat, too slow, awkward game, drafted 41st, MVP. I don't think he had the Dirk Nowitzki. I'm a better shooter than Dirk Nowitzki, but he could have put anything on there, and I would have believed it, because at draft time, he went 41st, and people wrote him off, and you had a great piece about that whole build-up. But some of the big stuff is they have to be well-rounded enough with their game and their skill set that it's not just rim running. And that was a little bit of the hesitation I had, and I think you did well as well, with James Wiseman. I just wasn't totally into the shooting stuff. And he's a rookie. He took his lumps. I'm sure he'll bounce back. But I didn't like him in that two spot per se when you had other creation type guards, bigger wings that were still available when you're drafting.
Yeah, I mean, I had him at two, but it was more because there wasn't it was like a lack of anyone else more than that. I thought he was a two, and I still think James Wiseman is going to be great. But like looking back, like honestly, Usman Garuba just went out and dropped like 16 and 14 today against Valencia in an enormous game, like an absolutely huge game. It was the ACB semifinals, and like they needed Garuba to come up. He made three threes, you know, had a couple of big dunks. He absolutely dominated the glass. Just an enormous performance in a big game. And I mean, that's the kind of guy I'd rather have on my team. Like, I'd rather have the multi-versatile, like, Garuba type than have James Wiseman, even if Usman Garuba is 6'8" with a 7'3" wingspan, as opposed to James Wiseman, who's 7'1" with like a 7'6" wingspan.
And you're not as worried about the Garuba offense, and if he gives you 15-16 a night, great, but you're really drafting him for his defensive versatility. And that, again, speaks to, if you need points on the board, you draft the wings, you draft the shooters first, and Garuba will be a great fit, but I'm still not of the camp to put him in the top 10 when there's other available guys that we mentioned on the board first.
Yeah, I don't have him in the top 10. I would be surprised if he ends up in the top 10 for me, but he's probably going to be a lottery guy for me at this point. The defensive tape for Garuba is too good. It's
ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's unlike anything I've seen at like the international level for a young player. He is so exceptional on that end that it's ridiculous. Okay. Do you have any other kind of strong takes on the bigs and the way that maybe the way to explain it is like, you know, giving a negative example. I feel like someone like Isaiah Jackson worries me a little bit. Like, I've seen lottery hype for him, and I just can't get there in large part because, and I don't mean to like single out Isaiah Jackson, right? Like, there are a few of these guys that we could talk about, but in his case, like, Isaiah is 6'10", not super like strong or anything to like hold his position, not an elite defensive rebounder, but a great shot blocker, has some mobility to switch, but not an elite switch guy yet. I'm just not quite there, given the way that the big position is going in the NBA with Isaiah Jackson.
Great point. I agree with you with what's going on right now with the playoffs, what went on in the bubble. And I was reminded by a coworker at work today how I was way higher on Sharif Cooper when we first saw him the first couple of games. Now I have him more in like the mid to late 20s range. Yep. You have to look at it from a bigger picture of a game or two, a season or two. The NBA, I would more look at it as like a 3 to 5 year picture of the way the game and league has changed, as opposed to here's one playoff run and the bigs were dominant, or the year before Bam Adebayo was dominant. Or if we go to college, Sharif Cooper for 2 or 3 games, we're like, you know what, the shot's like a little busted, but he's such a great playmaker. And then 8 or 9 games later, we're saying, well, he's a little small now. And if you're physical with him, you bump him on his path, he can't get in the lane, his jumper's a little funky. And then water finds its level, he kind of settles down to where he should be. It's more of just a buyer beware of, don't always ride the wave of the trend until it really asserts itself as being something that's going to last.
Nah, I'm with you. And I kind of want to continue talking about Cooper a little bit, but let's take a quick commercial break before we get into our guys who are going to rise up the draft boards as we move through the pre-draft process. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where joy mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Okay, and we're back. Penny and I wanted to do this little experiment where we talk about, like basically place bets on guys who we think are going to move up the pre-draft process throughout the entire time. And I kind of mentioned before the commercial break that I wanted to talk about Sharif Cooper. And it's not because I think Sharif Cooper is going to be one of these guys. It's more because I wrote the Miles McBride draft guide profile last week. And I was blown away by how good his tape was in comparison to what I thought it was going to be. Maybe this is just me, you know, tuning out of West Virginia by mid-February because I was kind of sick of watching them. But they got awesome on offense, and it was in part because Deuce was like a genuine pull-up threat and also really developed and worked his way into being a high-level pick-and-roll distributor when they moved to more of that four-out offense once Oscar Tshiebwe departed.
There it is, yep.
So I actually have Deuce higher than Sharif Cooper now on my board. I have him like right around 20, Deuce, and I have Sharif like kind of similar to where you are, like mid-20s range. And I think that Deuce is the guy I wanted to talk about. We talked about him a little bit last week after, and I did the draft guide profile after that. I mean, I really was kind of blown away, and I think that his athleticism is just a lot, and the way that his athleticism translates to functional play on the court, I think it's a lot more underrated than kind of what I thought it was going in.
I'm a little surprised by that take. I mean, we talked a little about it last week. I thought that you had kind of settled that late first. The 20s a big jump, but it comes down to A or B. Like, you're not the biggest Trey Mann fan. I know you're not the biggest Cam Thomas fan. So if those guys move down kind of like similar positionally, I get how he would jump there. My hangup is still remains the same. Just, is he a one? Is he a two? Is the jumper real enough from distance? Can he get to it off the pull up quick enough? Is he going to be able to finish at the rim as well with bigger guys, a little bit more congestion maybe, but did have a good end to the season. And Sneaky had that like 30-point game in the first round of the tournament when most of the world was sleeping. I know you were probably awake and it's like 2 in the afternoon for you. But it was kind of like brushed on the rug because there weren't as many eyes drawn to it.
Oh, I'll be honest. I think he's definitely a point guard. Like, I don't even think it's a question. Like, I think that the skills he showed in the second half of the year as a pick and roll distributor, I mean, he averaged almost 6 points a game in his last or 6 assists a game over his last 15 games once they went to like that more spread 4-out offense. So yeah, I think he's definitely a point guard. I'm not real worried about that. I am a little bit worried about the jump shot. He's a lot more comfortable getting into that mid range area than he is,
right,
you know, pulling up from three, but you know, this is a guy that took almost 4 threes a game and hit them at 42% from three and is very comfortable getting to that pull-up shot. So I don't know. I kind of think that it's going to be okay. Like, I think he's a legit like pull-up weapon and a legit distributor who makes really good decisions. Like, he very rarely turns it over and is also one of the best pressure on ball perimeter defenders in this class. Like, he's small, and I don't think that the defense is going to like quite translate at the highest level because guys are just going to like get him switched on to other people. But man, I was surprised with where I ended up on Deuce. I think he, and like all the background comes back super like awesome, great kid, you know, very hard worker, like has, you know, maybe a little bit soft spoken, but like, you know, high level, competitor, everything like that. Like all of that is very positive. I'm just kind of, I'm at the point where it's hard for me when I went back to watch the tape. It was hard for me to be like, okay, this guy just has much better tape than Jaden Springer. This guy has much better tape than Cam Thomas, if you look at the totality of what he's doing on the court.
Right. If you watch the defense, the passing, sure.
Yeah.
So he's 20, roughly 20 for you right now then?
20, 22, something in that range.
So a broader draft question and kind of just your stance or strategy based. If he's 20, if you're taking him 20, are you considering him a starting guard or somebody who comes off the bench?
I think that he's probably most likely to be a very, very, very high level sixth man. I think that's probably the most likely outcome of all of this. Right. But if you told me he's a starter, like I think there's real starter outcomes with him because of the distribution and pull-up game.
At the same time, would you be shocked if I said he split time next year in the G League?
No, because I expect everyone that goes 20 to spend time in the G League.
Right. Well, part of it's like the war of attrition, and I actually just kind of made my first big board for this aggregate big board that's coming out. And it's difficult when you put names on paper and you can't really get tied as much to spots as opposed to getting tied to names and who'd you rather take. And the way you value him over the guys we just listed, he kind of settles into that range. I'm sorry. I just have him a little bit lower. I have more concerns with the shooting. And similar to you, I probably tuned out West Virginia a little bit too much later in the season. But the numbers are great. I mean, it's 40% across the board. And then, like, what was it, 80% plus from the foul line, too?
Yep.
Like, the shot could get there, just a little bit slow getting there. I beat this to death, but that 20 range, or maybe, like, 25 to 35, I'd rather just maybe make a run at a wing, whether that's TJ Shannon, or you roll the dice with a guy like Zaire Williams, or even Jaden Springer, who the net outcome could just be higher if it all clicks and works out. If it works out for Miles McBride and he's a backup or a six man, that's great. But if I'm kind of not taking this as a flyer, but as a long-term investment pick, I would maybe go with one of those other guys first.
Deuce over his final 12 games was 17 points, 5.5 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals on 43-42-82. Like, he was awesome. And that's against, he played Kansas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Texas, then like TCU and Kansas State, who were garbage, and then TCU again. But Baylor, Oklahoma State twice, yeah. And then Syracuse. So, like, they played 8 of those 12 games against top 25 teams, something like that, top 30 teams, let's say, in the case of Texas Tech, right?
Yeah, it was real competition.
So I was very impressed. I was very, very impressed.
Will you stamp him as this draft's version of Malachi Flynn for you, or are you not ready to commit?
I think for people who weren't around last draft,
Sam was all on the Malachi train late first, had him a little bit higher, and obviously, I would say he panned out for his draft range where he went. I'm just I'm wondering if it's a similar type of basketball love you have for him, or if there's somebody else that's stolen your heart.
I think I actually like him a little bit more than Malachi because he's athletic.
Oh,
in a way that Malachi,
okay.
It's not that Malachi isn't an athlete, but he's not. He's just kind of a different dude. And by the way, Malachi Flynn over his final 24 games this year in the NBA. 12.5 points, 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds. Shot 40% from the field, which isn't great, but 37 from 3 and 83 from the line. Only 1.5 turnovers. Played good defense, not great defense. But you give me 12.5 points with 4.5 assists and a 3-to-1 assist turnover ratio for a rookie guard, I'm in. Sounds great to me.
And where he was drafted, too. I believe he's Rookie of the Month, one of those months, week or month. I get all the days confused. But he won an award. He was the best rookie at some point during the season.
Best rookie in April.
Earlier in that run. Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
There it was. I am still happy with Malachi Flynn. I think that it's a similar deal with Miles McBride. Very high-level defender. Very creative. A legitimate passer. Doesn't make errors. Like, the lack of turnovers and the lack of errors, I think, is a thing that goes underrated. We all get very excited about guys that have the crazy highlights, right? But not making mistakes is just as valuable. Maybe not just as valuable.
That's a different highlight tape. But yeah, I don't think that has that same number of views on social media. But yes, also valuable in basketball circles.
Yeah. Okay, give me your first guy that you think is going to rise in the pre-draft process, because we just went for way too long about my guy.
You're a guy. All right, we have about 10 of them. This might be we'll take one now, another for a rainy day. So this is going to be like a weird take, and you might say, come on, because most places he's 6th or 7th, but he's 17th on your board. So this is kind of me selling you back the prospect.
Sure.
I'm going with Keon Johnson from Tennessee.
Okay, yeah, sell me. I mean, I think Keon is somewhere solidly between 7 and, 13 for teams.
My take here is he more solidifies himself in that 7 to 8 range. Statistically, not a great shooter during the season. 45% from the field, 27% from 3. He was in the 60th percentile via synergy on catch and shoot attempts, while also being the 69th percentile, being unguarded in catch and shoot. So you see some things there. And he'll be able to showcase this in the one-on-0 drills. And I don't think, when you watch the tape, that the shot is beyond fixable. There's some wild misses in there, for sure. Banking a shot, hit one off the side of the rim, whatever. It just looks more stiff than anything. It's not a sort of shot. It's not fluid enough, put it that way. It's in pieces. It's like a catch, a bend, an extension. Repetition can fix that type of stuff. And we've seen his athletic tools, we've seen the vertical pop in the lane and on defenders during the SEC. Having the time and space in an individual workout, that explosion off the floor is going to pop even more. And there's already been some early reports on how good he's looked during the pre-draft process, and I'm not surprised. I mean, my hang-up with him has been the inability to maximize that type of skill set in the half court within the flow of the offense. But he was always great when the game was up and down or played faster. So if our holdup is the jumper, my argument is more with repetition, it's going to look good enough if that's the one thing. And you know he's going to defend. You know he's going to get up and down the court and run and jump and finish and slash and take stuff off a secondary break. I think the jumper is going to get there, that he'll be intriguing in that 7 to 8 to 10 range.
I don't disagree with that. I think that is absolutely really probably true. To be honest, I think he's going to look really, really, really good. So I'm going to read you a quote from 2019. After working on this every day over a month, he seems more confident when he's shooting. During a private workout, he got hot and made 16 threes in a row at one point. If he can shoot like that in front of NBA teams, that will help his draft stock. What player do you think I'm talking about?
I thought it was Keon Johnson. I'm like, I haven't read. I have not played 2019, draft.
2019 pre-draft.
Gosh. That's tough. That's tough. You're killing me here. It's a guard. I'm going to bail and say Peyton Pritchard.
So
I know that jumper's good enough.
Draft before that is what that was. It was,
I'm sorry, 19, not 20.
So it was Nasir Little. And
no, different players, but yeah.
Different, but similarly in terms of like had hype as a top 5 pick, top 6 pick coming in, was very comfortable in that, pre-draft. I think I ranked Nasir at like 10 or 11. It's maybe 9, 10, 11, 12, something in that range. I don't remember. But shot it like okay in workouts, but you just kind of go back to the tape. Like at the end of the day, these teams really do go back to the tape, I think, and make decisions. Not all of them. There are teams that are dumb, but like most of them go back and look. No, I will not. Most of them go back and just fall back on what they saw on the court. And it's hard with Keon, man. Like, it's hard.
it's very hard. And I'm kind of trying to sell myself, too, in that range. But he was just so much lower on yours. For Nasir, some of that build was the North Carolina season wasn't what they expected. He had limited minutes, didn't really
came off the bench, and then kind of started late in the year, kind of like Keon.
Well, I thought you were going to go Zaire Smith from Texas Tech, so at least Nazir, whatever. But with Nazir, his build, too, was the preseason, that summer before. He's playing with pros on L.A., and the hype is built because of that. Like, Keon Johnson was great at USA basketball, but still kind of this unassuming, small-town kid where Nazir had this huge rep. And I don't know if just after the fact, people were trying to, like, get back in that, and he slipped a little bit on draft night. He's been up and down. I think he had a 30-point game this year. He was sick. I think he may have COVID.
Yeah, and look, this isn't me, like, taking
factors to it.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, taking shots at Nasir Little, who I think is still going to be, like, an NBA player for a decade. I'm a believer in Nasir Little generally, but I'm more speaking of what happens on draft night with these guys, right?
Yes.
You know, I like I said, I had Nasir, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, something in that range. I think I was probably a little bit high on him, but I think he's still going to end up being, you know, returning very good value for where the Trailblazers picked him. I guess that the
good.
Reason
you put me in a mental pretzel here. That was good. I applaud you.
The reason that I compare the two is just, you know, guys who were expected, you know, there was a lot expected of them in the preseason. Things clearly were a bit off to start the year. I mean, even in the preseason, it seems like with their programs in terms of the hype versus what they actually were. I think Nasir should have played more on that North Carolina team. Just in general, like, I think that Roy Williams, you know, as great of a coach as he is, I don't think he handled that particularly well. I think that they could have, you know, played him more early in the season, got him more prepared, gotten, you know, more prepared for themselves later in the year, etc. Right? Same thing with Tennessee, I think, happens with Keon Johnson. Keon Johnson comes off the bench early in the season, doesn't quite make the impact that what we're all expecting, yeah. Moves into
the
starting lineup.
We crush him on the podcast. He immediately has 27 points in the next game.
By the end of the year, he's, you know, looking okay. He's their most confident guy. He's getting points. Nasir, if you go back through their NCAA tournament run, like, he was, I think, double figures in most of those games. Like, I keep going back to that a little bit. And definitely different players, don't get me wrong, but for what their role is, they are a bit undersized. Like, Nasir Little is more of a true wing who's, like, more toward the four side of the spectrum than, like, the two, right? And that's just athletically, I mean. Keon doesn't have the athleticism problems, but again, Keon right now is more toward the three side of the spectrum than the two side of the spectrum in terms of his ball handling, shooting, etc. And he's a bit undersized at 6'5" with, like, a 6'7.5" wingspan to do that. So I'm not saying that, like, they're the same players. They're very different guys, very different roles, very different everything. I just keep coming back to that in my mind, and I keep coming back to the fact that I think teams, at the end of the day, for the most part, fall back on the tape that they've seen. And oftentimes the risers that we see in the pre-draft process, it's the guys who have that really strong tape and showcase themselves in the pre-draft process, show that it's always been there. It's not the guys that, like, didn't show it in college and then move up in the NBA draft. You know what I mean? Like, am I making sense when I say this?
No, you're making a lot of sense, because my kind of argument is the athleticism, the verticality of his jumps, all that is going to pop more in workouts, and it certainly will, because when you're kind of, like, training for that, just individual drills is different than playing within the flow of an offense. What I'm trying to sell is, if the jumper gets there, he can be that. In your case is, well, Nasir Little was the same thing. The jumper never really got there. Are you okay with this outcome taking him at 6 or 7? Probably not. But
I guess,
but
I guess
seven,
for me,
but he's higher than 17, I think, where you have him is my argument.
I guess for me, it's more, are teams going to believe it in the pre-draft process? It's not like, I think that Nasir Little has a real shot to shoot it at some point. I think Keon Johnson has a real shot to shoot it at some point. I'm a little bit lower on that than what other people seem to be in terms of evaluating that. But I'm skeptical that teams are going to go into a 1-on-0 workout with Keon Johnson and he's going to make 70 out of 100 threes at the end of a workout, and they're going to go, oh, he can shoot. I think that they're going to fall back on what they saw this year and say, like, oh wait, like this guy, when he was in the middle of like actual basketball, his mechanics flew all over the place, had a bit of a hitch and had like a very skinny base on his jumper. Like, is that going to fall back into that? You know what I mean? Like RJ Hampton did all of that last year too, and looked great pre-draft in terms of fixing his jumper, and his jumper looks better now. But at the end of the day, I think teams fell back to what they saw in New Zealand with the tape.
Yes, and kind of went lower. He went lower on draft night, but now we look at, and the end of the season is also fake life to me. I hate seeing like the stats from the last 2 weeks. People's like, well, see, look, he was that good. Now I'm going to contradict myself. Those last 2 weeks of the season, when he had freedom, he played really well. And he might have been rookie of the month week. I'm terrible with dates, but the jumper did look cleaner. And with Keon, maybe he doesn't make 70 shots in a workout, but if he makes 60 and it looks a little bit more fluid, it's a cleaner ball. His base is a little bit wider. It comes off his hand cleaner. The follow through is not like a pulling the string. It can just add to his case that it's closer than people may think.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good case. I think it's a good case for his long-term value, but I'm skeptical that it bears itself out on draft night, if that makes sense.
Very much so.
Okay. So my next guy actually is Usman Garuba. We kind of mentioned him. I won't go into like crazy depth on Garuba. He just had an enormous game again today, as I mentioned. I think teams are going to go back to what they've seen in Spain and go back and watch that tape, and he's just going to really stand out. I think a big thing that goes underappreciated with a lot of this stuff is oftentimes draft risers are not necessarily based off of what they do in the pre-draft process. It's based off of catching someone's eye in the pre-draft process and then evaluators going back and looking at the tape. It's really hard to do super in-depth evaluations seeing 700 minutes of 90 players over the course of an entire season, because you're trying to get eyes on everybody just to see what's going on. The postseason part of it is best to like do the deep dive on stuff, and that's kind of why my evaluations on guys can sometimes move up, move down, change a little bit, because it's that little bit of distance helps you get the whole context. And then on top of it, that little bit of distance allows you to like really do a deep dive and understand where a person sits within the construct of the entire draft cycle. So in the case of Garuba, I think that there's a real chance that these teams who just haven't gone overseas to see him, he's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. And the numbers aren't like unbelievable, like with Sengun, where he's, you know, putting up 17-9 every single game and winning Turkish League MVP.
Yes.
But in the case of Garuba, I think the tape isn't quite as impressive as Sengun, but in many ways it is pretty close. It's just on the other end of the floor defensively that it's that close. And I think as teams go back and really look at him, I think they're going to be like, oh shit, yeah, this is kind of a no-brainer. He's going to be able to step in immediately and play.
Is it better for Garuba to not even do pre-draft workouts and leave that shroud of secrecy in case the jumper doesn't look great? Is the tape so good that you just say, here's the tape? Like, he's rolling now in their playoffs. His biggest selling point is definitely his defensive ability, the upside, the motor, maybe some of that offense that hasn't really been tapped into yet. I'm not telling anyone what to do here, but even expose holes to be poked in his game and just let the tape kind of speak for itself.
I'm not going to say who the agent is, because I'm not like 1,000% sure on it, and people report it and all that stuff.
We're not doxing anyone here.
Yeah, well, no. Well, I mean, he's allowed to have an agent and everything, so I'm not worried about that front.
Yes, it's, we're not naming names.
Yeah, it's more that like I'm like 99% sure who the agent is. I'm not 1,000% sure, so I don't want to, you know, end up with that reported. But the agency that I believe he's working with is very, very good at that and like hiding guys and helping with draft positioning. So I think that they might do that. They'll probably do limited workouts for teams like in the 10 to 18 range that they think are good fits and kind of go from there.
Yeah, it'll be more strategic. It's not hiding him, but kind of like storing him away.
Well, and he has, like, he has the ACB finals coming up here that'll happen next week. So, like, it's, he's still got some time, basically, overseas before he can even consider coming over for pre-draft workouts.
Which, for him, is likely best-case scenario, too. Yeah. Because just organically, he's self, self-hiding, storing away because he physically can't leave the country because he has games.
Well, also, the other part of this, too, is, like, he has more tape out there on him than any other player in this draft.
Oh, like if, yeah. I mean, teams he's been in the Real Madrid system since, like, he was 12 or 13. Like, well, if you want Usman Garuba film, like, you can find it.
Well, do you know how many games he's played this year?
Well, he played in, like, two different leagues, right? It's, like, the Euro League and the other one. So, it's, like, a lot. Because I remember part of, like, the Doncic thing was, like, when he was over there, it was always worn out. He played 60 games this year. So, my guess for Garuba is going to be, like, 45.
Garuba's played 83 games of basketball
this year. Holy shnike. And people throw stones at grassroots basketball. How dare you play five games a weekend? This man has played 83 games in like 6 months. What are we talking about?
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, they played he plays both ACB and EuroLeague. Like,
yes,
it's,
yes. That's like some, what I was talking about.
Yeah. Some guys, you know, it's... they sit them one game or the other league. He plays like both every game. It feels
which is funny too, because when the name for it didn't first pop up, like everyone relaxed. Like I know he's been a prospect forever, but when he was kind of more solidifying himself as definitely a mid first round guy, I was diving into the tape, and what I tend to do first is just watch the offensive possessions, and then if I like what I see, don't like what I see, all right, let's pop on a full game. So I was watching all his offensive possessions, and every game it was like a different arena. I'm like, right. What is going on here? Then you see, like, oh, he played 7 minutes, he took two shots. Played 3 minutes, took a shot. Played 12 minutes, took two shots. So then, as the season wore on, you see the highlights start changing. Like, all right, we're in the same gym. This is the first. This is the second. Okay, like, he was playing more time. It was getting better. It was building. Didn't know it was 85 games. That's staggering.
Yeah, it is. Okay, you're up. Give me another one.
Yeah, I'm just going to poke you at this one because I know where you're at, and I'm going to go with Cam Thomas, who is 28th on your board.
Yeah, sure. He's going to go higher than 28. I have zero doubt about that. Yeah.
And workouts, he's going to be able to show what he is. He doesn't have to pass. You can go full bucket getter with range, moving on a shot. The LSU staff, when you talk to them, they said the kid never took a day off. He'd shoot for an hour and a half, either before or after practice every day, off days, Sunday mornings, whenever. Their percentages weren't great at 41% from the field, 33% from three, but did shoot 88% from the free throw line. He was just such a volume guy. He averaged 17 shots per game. I felt like he adjusted to his like crazy pace at times, which shows that his catch and shoot percentage, it's a 67th percentile while being guarded, was higher than 50% being unguarded because he was just used to like having a hand in his face, kicking out, taking a fadeaway three. His body just became prone to wanting a guy to challenge him rather than take an unguarded shot. There's going to be some offensively inclined teams that dig back into the tape, put eyes on these workouts, and he makes 33 threes in a row and just see the positives in the ability to be a bench type scorer higher than 28th.
Oh, yeah, he's going higher than 28. Like, he just is. There's no question about that. I would imagine on the mock I have him somewhere in the top 20, right? Something that range. He's going to go somewhere in the top 20, I think, for sure. I don't really have, like, I'm not going to make a case against that. I think that you're absolutely right. In terms of what I wrote in the draft guide, I'll just kind of, like, share, like, you know, gets most of his buckets off the jumper, extremely deep range beyond the NBA line, absolutely has a real mid-range game, good elevation on the jumper, clean off the catch, great rhythm on the jumper, shoots directly off of the hop with little wasted motion when right at the college three-point line, does need a bit of an exaggerated ball dip to generate power and rhythm when extended beyond the college three-point line. But the fact that he's already as smooth as he is off the hop when at that line portends well for his NBA development as he gets older and stronger. Epitome of a difficult shot maker that plays at his own pace and doesn't really seem to notice the contest from the defender. Great focus on the rim. If you go under a ball screen on Thomas, that ball's going up toward the basket from well beyond the college three-point line. He'll pull up behind the ball screen. You won't have enough time to get there to stop him. But if you switch against him, he actively hunts out mismatches and tries to take advantage. Excellent at stringing those out and creating advantageous opportunities for himself off of the bounce. So, look, And that's like half of what I wrote about his scoring ability.
And seen. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. Not, yeah. Not
right,
even
right
and seen.
Spot on.
Yeah. But right. like, the other big thing that I wrote is like, wouldn't worry about the 32.5% 3-point mark. Clearly a more skilled shooter than that. Because, you know, while I mentioned that doesn't seem to notice the contest, it's clear that the contest does affect him because he's a better yes, shooter than yes. 32% from three. He just is.
Exactly. And if we're going beyond percentages, beyond the tape a little bit, NBA, you need bench isolation scores. Go get one. I can't create for you. Find a bucket. And he finds ways to find buckets. Granted, he finds a lot of shot attempts, too. But
yeah.
every single game, he's out there.
If he goes 13 or 14, I won't be surprised. I like more complete players than that, which is why I have him at like 28, 27, you know, 26, something in that range. My guess is he ends up, honestly, I would say he's probably going to end up like 24 on my board. Just kind of looking at the names that are in that range. But it's, yeah, I think that you're right. Like, I don't really have a case against you. So, let's move on. So
next.
For me, next is going to be Kessler Edwards. And I have Kessler Edwards as a first round grade right now. I think that the general consensus of NBA teams is more like mid second, just based off of what I've been told about, like where, kind of where the feedback came in and all that stuff. I think as more teams look at his tape at Pepperdine, they're going to see a guy who's really valuable defensively, really switchable, and he's really going to shoot it. And then on top of it, he's working out in Santa Barbara right now against guys like Scotty Barnes, Greg Brown, Nimi Keita, et cetera. And from what I've been told, he doesn't look out of place there at all. Like, there's been some question of, oh, he doesn't play a high enough competition outside of when they play Gonzaga, you know, et cetera. Right. But
yeah, that's a concern.
Yeah. From what I've been told, he looks not out of place at all and is playing really, really well there. So I'm going to go Kessler Edwards is my next guy.
You're sneaky. You're taking inside information. This is insider trading right here. Looks great. I'll mention him on the pod. My concern with one of them is the inflated numbers a little bit of Pepperdine, especially the reboundings and blocks by playing in the West Coast Conference, and you're not playing the top tier teams every night. And just how do you contextualize when he has 37 and 11 versus Pacific? He did have 17 points in a triple overtime game versus UCLA, two games versus Gonzaga. He had 14 points in one, 11 in another. And kind of, I know this is like a little bit of a wacky example, but just for the argument I'm trying to make, when John Morant was at Murray State, you knew in conference the competition wasn't going to be high major. Just that's the nature of the beast. He had similar questions to an extent about that. And he had 38, 9, and 5 against Alabama. He had 17 and 16 against Marquette. He had 28 against Florida State. So it balances out when he has a 40 ball versus SIU Edwardsville. So a little bit for Kessler, it's how much do you think the numbers have been bumped up by playing not exactly like the premier teams night in, night out? Now, if you're telling me in the workouts it looks like it's going to translate, it's probably a different story, but that's my initial hesitation, I'd say, to have him in the first round.
So typically I think a big part of the numbers being inflated on that level tends to be usage. Right? Like he has a ton of usage and thus gets a lot of shot attempts and a lot of opportunities. I mean, Kessler Edwards took like 12 shots a game this year. Like, it's not like he was dominating their offense, right? Colby Ross, the point guard there, who's also in this draft and, you know, probably not a, you know, definitely not a draftable player, but someone that, you know, if he's stuck in the G League for a couple of years and got a cup of coffee in the NBA, wouldn't surprise me by any stretch. You know, he averaged 13 shots a game, averaged 8 assists, had the ball in his hands the whole game, basically. Like, if you look at his usage rate, like, it was, he had like a 26 usage rate, and that's without accounting for the passing. So you just look at the ball, you look at what they have, or like the way that their offense ran. I mean, it's Kessler was involved, but it's not like he was dominating the ball. So I don't know that the numbers are like crazy inflated. They're inflated. Like, he's not going to average 17 a game in the NBA, right? But I think he's probably going to be a guy that, you know, steps up and knocks down corner threes and movement threes and plays high level defense because he's so smart in help situations.
Right. I just, some of the offense too, like he's not, the numbers aren't great off the dribble, and he has to show some level, I would argue, of shot creation, especially without, he has this tendency to turn his back to the basket and back to his defense to back down his man from the mid post, not always going to be able to do that. And with the shot, are you worried at all about kind of the release point where it's over the top, but a little bit of a push and kind of kicks his legs out a little bit too?
A little bit worried about the kick. Not as worried about the push. I think that that'll get ironed out as he continues to just kind of get stronger. You know, like, I think that that's what he needs as much as anything. Like, very clearly has elite level touch. 88% free throw shooter. Yeah, I think that over time it's going to be fine. The thing that worries me is it just doesn't seem to, like, process passing reads at a super high level. Everything is an escape pass, not like a danger pass, you know?
And part of that's probably because you said he had a point guard who started every game when he was there, and it has a higher usage rate and could set the table. So maybe it's just he didn't have as many opportunities to score that way. And the strength I agree with, because if you watch some of his tape, a lot of it is second chance points on the glass and scoring over the top of guys, which isn't going to be as easy to do in the NBA when the guy you're shooting over the top of is 6'10 with a 7'3 wingspan.
Yeah, like I think he's a 3. I don't, like, he's a 3-4 hybrid who plays like super 3-4, high level, yeah, hype defense, you know, moving across different positions. So yeah, no, something in the like late first round range for me on Kessler Edwards. I would say he goes more top of the second round, as opposed to, you know, where I have him. But I think that would be probably a 15 spot jump based off of where he is right now.
Yeah, I have him lower. I don't value him as high as you, but I hear your sell.
Yeah. Well, let me go next, and then you can go too, because I think it's interesting to compare and contrast these two guys particularly. I have Trey Murphy as another guy that I think is really going to help himself in the pre-draft process. And I think it's for similar reasons to Kessler Edwards, but whereas Kessler, I think, probably didn't get seen as much with Trey, I think that, like, getting him out of the Virginia scheme where his tape is already good, but kind of getting him in a different scenario is going to help him. I think he's going to solidify himself in that first round range.
Yeah. I was an early adopter to kind of like the Trey Murphy thing too. He could be limited at Virginia to just catch and shoot a quick slash from the perimeter or backdoor cuts for dunks. And that's kind of what they wanted him to do in his role there. He turns 21 next week and still would argue that the limelight and the preparation that comes with that is still newish to him as a prospect. I know he had a full ACC season, but a year ago he was at Rice and he transferred thinking he's going to sit out, and you're thrown into the middle of this fire and finds his way to the other side. Now he's this draft prospect because he's 6'9 and has this nice stretch to end the year of the last 4 to 5 games. I don't want it to be one dimensional offensively. A little bit inconsistent rebounder at his size. He only took 41 free throws all year, which could be attributed to just lack of physical play and strength and budding skill set that's still running to form. But I like him as a first round guy with touch, with athletic pop at his size, and lots of defensive tools, even though the finished product may not be there yet, to be this switchable wing that's so coveted in the NBA.
So here is why I have Kessler Edwards just a couple spots higher. Kessler Edwards was a much better defender this year than Trey Murphy was. Like, they have very similar limitations. They're both like 6'8", 6'9". Kessler's arms are probably like a little bit longer, so probably pretty similar in terms of like the way that their length plays itself out on a basketball court. I just kind of think Kessler is a better defender than Trey, and I think that they're going to play similar roles. Trey's probably a little bit better of a shooter than Kessler, but I think I'd rather have the more well-rounded guy, given that I think they're both high-level shooters.
Yeah, I'm going to stay with Trey just because I do believe in the buzzwordy upside of piecing it all together. And I just think that at 6'9", the shot, all, like, the numbers were good, but like still like a little funky with like leaning his head to the left. And you could tell his confidence built as the season went on. And he hit that little lull that was stronger to finish the year, that if he believes in himself, the ability and the stuff is going to click. Not that Kessler Edwards is more of a finished product, but has been able to show it more, I guess, from... They both played... Was Kessler Edwards 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he played three. It's technically Trey Murphy's third year, but I would just argue that Trey Murphy's still kind of like discovering who he is as a prospect, and Kessler Edwards just is more of a more finished product of what it would be. Not a knock at his ceiling, but just I'm more curious as you dig through the layers what Trey Murphy could potentially become.
No, I think I agree with that in terms of ceiling, because also Trey is just like a more explosive, bouncy kind of athlete too. Like, he just is, you know?
Yeah. No, he was the king of the backdoor dunk, flex, frown, scowl once or twice a game.
And they were like fucking tomahawks. Like, he would throw that thing down. Okay.
I have one last counterpoint here. Are we worried at all that, like, this is a little bit of, like, the Jerome Robinson-ish archetype?
No, because Jerome had to play on the ball, whereas these guys don't. And Jerome was not very good defensively, and Kessler is. I understand your point, though, just in terms of, like, guys that are really skinny and, you know, maybe don't have, like, the positional strength for what they have to do. But
yes.
I think these guys are...
But yeah.
Yeah, I think these guys are just kind of different roles, and that makes it a bit easier.
Yes. All right. Good. So I got two here. I'm going to lead off with a less in-depth one, and I'm going to go with Dejan Nix from the G League Ignite, who is currently 58th on your board.
Yeah, that's too low on my part, for what it's worth. From what I've been told, that's too low.
So there's no real way around it. He didn't look like himself in the bubble. He didn't. He was out of shape to the point where scouts asked what happened, because he was this fluid, big guard with end-to-end vision, quickness, Euro-stepping in high school, and then he showed up, and he just looked like a different player. And it was a funky year with quarantine and COVID and restrictions. I saw him this past week in Vegas, and physically he resembles the prospect I remember from Steph Curry camp prior to his senior year. He's in much better shape. He passes the look test. His workouts and impact have at least passed the test too. I know you're working out against nobody and playing 2-on-2, but I could see kind of this return to form aiding in his ability to move quicker on and off the ball. And the shooting, while it can still be a concern, you don't want guys to go under every ball screen, at least if the body's improving, it shows that he's bounced back and willing to put in the work to get himself where he needs to be.
Yeah, no, I like to hear that. That's really great. That's what I've got on that. I don't really have a ton on Dejan, because I don't want, given everything you've said, I don't want to, like, I don't think we need to rehash what happened in the bubble with Dejan Nix. Like, it just didn't look like himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was, and now he did, and it was kind of just this odd middle year that it was for everybody and will be written about for generations, but it seems like he's kind of reverting back to form in a good sense.
Yeah, which is great. I'm super pumped about Dejan Nix, hopefully kind of getting things back together a little bit. So let's go on ahead and give me your fourth guy.
All right, my fourth guy, and this one, to me, I feel is appropriately ranked 29th on your board. But just as someone who the workouts will help when he's able to showcase his full skill set to NBA scouts, and that's Jeremiah Robinson Earl from Villanova.
See, this was the most interesting one that you put on your list for me, because I couldn't really tell where you were going to go with it in terms of that. Because, like, not a down. Crazy...
this is a positive podcast, yes.
No, I know. Not a crazy athlete, not a crazy, like, run and jump or, you know, explosiveness guy. I don't know if he's going to play at the combine. Like, it's like a weird mix of things. You know what I mean? Like, for a draft riser, at least.
And right. And it's more your board, I feel, is appropriate at having him 29. Like, I think I technically have him at 33, but some people have middle of the second, which I'm more arguing against that, because at Villanova, he bought in. He played wherever he had to. He didn't force the action offensively. He moved the ball. He set screens. He rolled. He got more offensive freedom when Colin Gillespie went down with a torn left MCL. He brought the ball up a little bit. He flashed some perimeter ability. The question mark is going to be a shot from three, because at 6'9", which may be generous for his height, even if you're playing a small ball five, you have to be able to stretch the defense. The guys have to close out to you. He was 28% from three this past year. It was a low number of attempts. He took 82 for the season. He took 64 the year before. His synergy numbers from mid-range are a 90th percentile. There's no real problem with his form. He squares his shoulders well. His feet are right. When going out of pick and pop, he looks to kind of catch and shoot. it's more of a confidence and belief thing. He can hesitate just like a split second and think about it. And I'd say that part of that's maybe just he doesn't want to play outside of himself when he was there at Villanova, where those guys are so good, but ingrained to catch, jump stop, pass it opposite, cut, dive. He didn't try to like stray from what he was, I guess, position programmed to do. And he's such a blue-collar worker type that he's going to get it right. And teams are going to leave workouts impressed with what he can do from three.
So on the measurements, I will say that back in 2018, so 3 years ago, he measured in at like a real 6'9 in shoes. So
okay. Well, yeah, depends on your shoes without shoes, yeah.
Yeah, like I have some faith. I mean, like, look, you have a better gauge of this stuff being 6'7". Like, it, I think it's easier for you to, like, stand next to someone.
I was actually reminded in an elevator in Vegas, a guy came on. He goes, how tall are you? I goes, 6'7". He goes, I saw somebody who was 7'1 once. I'm like, okay. I'm shorter. Like, what? How does this conversation end? He's like, yeah, his feet were bigger, too. I'm like, all right, buddy, you're scaring me. Whatever. But, yeah, I'm able to good, man. You're in the lobby, too? Okay, we're going there. Yeah, I'm able to do it at my height and engage it. And Jeremiah's been on the Under Armour circuit, so I've seen him, and I'm probably biased because he is such a high character kid. And I've told this story before, but we were at camp at IMG Academy, and IMG Academy is huge, and they bring around in golf carts that sit like 12 or 15 people. So we're going from the cafeteria to the gym during camp. And like the shuttle legitimately like breaks down like on a bridge. And it's like, great. We're in Florida on a bridge. We're like 300 feet away. It's pouring rain. And like without hesitation, Jeremiah jumps out and starts like pushing the back of the van, the back of the golf cart. I'm like, this is a dude. So you're going to hit pick and pop three. He's going to work hard, not complain. You're going to push us to safety and to being dry. Like, I want that guy on my team.
Yeah, he's a real push the team bus kind of guy.
Write the headline right now. That'll be like the third nugget when he's drafted. Pushed a broken down van from IMG. They'll embellish it and say he pushed it for like 3 miles or something, but that happened. That was real.
Pushed it 15 miles in the snow is what it's going to be at the end.
And then worked out, took 600 jumpers afterwards, did 1,000 push-ups.
No, I mean, I've been in early. I've been on Jeremiah for a while. I'm a big fan. I love his game. I love everything he brings to the table. I think he's multi-skilled, multi-talented. I worry about just the measurements being 6'9" and being a four and having 6'9" wingspan and all that stuff. But yeah, look, as long as the shot translates, I think he's going to play in the NBA for a decade, like pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm a believer.
Okay. That's all I've got on my end today in terms of draft risers. Is there anyone else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. We can table this. I got a few more that we can go on at a later date. I'm sure we'll do this again in a week or two.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this next week. I mean, we wanted to do this because we have the combine coming up. Combine invites went out earlier this weekend, and I think, or this past weekend, and I would imagine we'll have a combine list early next week. I don't know if they've sent out the second batch of invitations yet, but typically you have to like get the responses from people, see how many people are actually going to come, and then you have to kind of figure out how you have to fill out the rest of the combine, right? So.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Penny, please tell me your reaction to seeing that I got called a pipsqueak on the internet last night.
I wasn't going to mention it. I wasn't. And I always try to think like a little bit if I have an intro with some spice to it. And I was downstairs before I came up to start recording. I said, you know what? I'm going to leave it alone and let him bring it up if he wants to be the bad boy of draft podcasting.
The bad boy of draft podcast.
put it in your Twitter bio.
The bad boy of awards trutherism.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I mean, it's amazing. I love the internet so much. Yeah, I mean, we've got Greg Logan here, who works for Newsday, voting for Andre Drummond for Defensive Player of the Year last year, and then, like, you know, shouting, vindication! After Rudy Gobert wins this year. What are we doing here?
What is that? I mean, even how do we even get here? How do we cross over into that space? And I saw the exchange. I mean, I felt you were pretty civil. Like, I didn't think you were taking personal shots. It was a little unwarranted by our friend.
No, like, these votes affect players' money. Like, these votes affect contract incentives. They affect, you know, whether or not a player is eligible for the Supermax deal. You know, that's literally something that, what does Jason Tatum get? Something like $25 million extra if he makes the All-NBA team this year? Like, these votes genuinely matter. So for people to give Andre Drummond a Defensive Player of the Year vote, I mean, it's just like indefensible at the end of the day for me. And then this guy comes into my DMs and,
you know. Well, you're always going to get weird votes. Like, didn't Derrick Rose get a first place MVP vote this year?
That was from the fans. There's a fan vote for MVP.
Sure. Still that's a weird element of it. And didn't Marin or Rivera get one vote short of being unanimous? And it didn't someone just update on Rotten Tomatoes a bad review on Paddington, so it's 99% rather than 100%. Right. There's always going to be somebody who's out there to try to be different.
There's always going to be someone, but that stuff is different for me because, yeah, look, we can talk about basketball as an art form and all that stuff, but Paddington 2 is legitimately an art form, right?
filmmaking. I knew leaving that breadcrumb, you wouldn't leave it alone. That's beautiful.
And the way that people emotionally respond to films is going to be different for everyone. Basketball, yes, aesthetically, there are factors that make people love, for instance, Jamal Crawford, and revere him to such an extent to where he is considered, an elite player in the history of scorers, right? In terms of having an incredible bag and ability to get to his own shot, right? Yes. Despite the fact that he was a really good player for a long time, not never an all-star, never was really all that close to being an all-star, right? We have ways now to be able to know what the impact of a player is. And it's not just Rudy Gobert versus Andre Drummond. It's the thought process to where you get to that conclusion. I just don't understand how one could watch Andre Drummond and have any idea what they're looking at. Or in this guy's case, been in the business for 48 years. God, if you've been in the business 48 years and you can't see that Rudy Gobert is a better defender than Andre Drummond, get out of the business. What are you doing here, man? 48 years is a long time to not know what the hell you're doing.
you're queuing this up for a boxing match between celebrities people do. You're just stoking the flame right now.
But you understand why this frustrates me, because there are
I do and I don't. You answered your own question that it's the internet and people are nuts. There'll be podcasts that we do that people just seem in your mentions, our mentions, whatever, that they're kind of just talking to themselves. I love engagement. I love when people talk to us and call us idiots or say we're great or whatever. But then there's sometimes people who just will write 8 or 9 straight things. And it's I don't even know what you want me to respond to this. And see, I don't take it personally.
That doesn't bother me though. I'm good with that. Please engage with us. Fans, please. We do this for fans, right?
Yeah, no, it's fun. But you just got to block out the haters a little better is my point.
But this person has a vote. This person wasn't even a hater for me. This person has a vote.
Just a hater in general.
This person helps to determine contract structure in the NBA essentially at this point, because that's what this is.
And bigger than Paddington. Yeah.
It's please come at me with whatever. Hey, I don't really care. I'm at that point where I'm good with it. But it eludes me to where we can have the people like this. There are so many people. Go give Steve Jones a vote. Go give Nekias Duncan a vote. Go give Danny LaRue, Nate Duncan. Give people who actually do the work and do smart and stuff.
And watch a lot of basketball.
And watch a lot of basketball and contextualize the league. Look, you might agree, you might disagree with those guys on some level, but you can't really ever question that they put in the work.
No shot. I mean, it's hard. Hard sometimes on Twitter when you're watching a game, when you follow those guys and they're doing live updates and spins on the analytics and spins on lineups. And here's a clip, here's a video. They're definitely watching. They're not mailing it in.
Yeah, no question. So give votes to those guys. Don't let, this guy who thinks Andre Drummond is a top 5 defender in the league like vote for these awards that actually determine contract structure. It's just, it's kind of indefensible to me, I guess. That's end of rant. You know, having said that, had you ever seen the word pipsqueak written out it like in like written no, form before
think
that?
So. That was like a schoolyard barb you throw at somebody in like 1942 or something. I don't like remember the last time I heard pipsqueak. That's why I cackled when you sent it. And then I realized that you actually like quote tweeted it. I'm like, that's good.
I will say this. I got one. Oh, this was probably a long time ago. And to be honest, like I sort of kind of deserved it in this case. I got an angry message from, who was it? I think it was like Frank Isola or something. And it was when I was working at CBS and like his retort was, and while you're up, go get John Rothstein a coffee. So I was like, you know what? That's a good one. I accept that one. That one works.
No, it's, you know, it's not because you just respond and say, Frank, if you did your homework, you know John Rothstein has never drank a cup of coffee, which is 100% true. Also, yeah, I heard no, glass I, of wine. So it's like, yeah. I get it, but it was a good dig. It was not it wasn't the right information, but it was a good dig. Like, ah, it got me. Sometimes you've got to take your L's.
Totally.
It was a good one. Sometimes people have a good comment. It's like, I'm not even going to add to that because it was perfect.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, I was, like, 100% in. I was like, you know what? Like, that's on me, and I just got owned. You know, good work, Isola.
I'll take a lap.
I'll take a lap. That was on it. Someone calling someone else a pipsqueak in written form, that I don't know that that meets the bar necessarily. All right, Penny. I'm probably 2 hours now from going to see In the Heights. So tell the people where they can find
it. It's a 5-hour podcast, yeah. I'm on Twitter. I'm @_Penny. Just was at 2 good events. We're gearing up for a huge July, chasing teams to opt into our stuff. 3 live periods. College coaches are going to be on the road a ton. So I'll be in that world. And I'm excited. The draft is also getting closer. And we saw today that next year's draft is like June 22nd, which is a lot better for me selfishly. So nature is healing. We're getting back to some level of normalcy, even if it just means the NBA draft.
Nature is healing.
One of our
writers on the hockey side, Sarah Sivian, tweets that like every time she gets seen out at a bar, and it just like it's great. It's one of my favorite things.
That was when I was in Vegas the other day. I saw both Jason Derulo and Mark Davis, owner of the Raiders, walk through the bar, and I was like, we're getting there. We're back. We're getting close.
I have like a real this might be like a poll that I put out like with the podcast. Could you pick Jason if Jason Derulo walked past you? Could you pick him out?
I honestly don't think he was. With one other person, and I was with my buddy. I said, I think that's Jason Derulo, and he came back like 30 minutes later and had like a group of like 20 people. I'm like, that's 1,000% him. And he has the same reaction. He's like, I don't know how you know that. Like,
yeah, like Jason did Derulo, you?
How do you not know that? Like, I Googled it. I went back to the image search. I'm like, I got to be sure. I'm like, no, it's definitely him.
Did you, like, Instagram stalk him to see, like, if he's, like, doing a show in
Vegas?
Yes, I did.
I actually did. Yeah, I did. I went to his Instagram page to see if he posted something. So I thought you were going to be like, did you see if he's on tour, whatever. Yeah, no, I'm a creep. I looked. He wasn't there.
Oh, man. He wasn't in Vegas?
No, he didn't post he was in Vegas. Didn't mean he wasn't physically there.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, Jason, big fan if you're listening.
Shout out Jason Derulo. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.